Bottom Line in Business. Voice America Business.
This is The Growth Strategist with Aldana Ambler. All comments, views, and opinions expressed on the following show are solely those of the host, guest, and its callers. It's time for The Growth Strategist. Here's your host, Aldana Ambler.
Welcome to the show. This is The Growth Strategist, and I'm Aldana Ambler, and each week we rotate through different growth strategies like acquisitions and franchising and geographic expansion for mid-sized companies, and the host and the guests and the listeners are from mid-sized companies, meaning about 20 to 200 million. I'm going to switch things around today just a little bit, and what I'm going to do is I've gotten a series of emails over the last couple of weeks asking questions that are not about a specific growth strategy. You know, what I asked for was, what little nuisance thing, what recurring problem do you have that keeps coming back? And it's not, you know, it doesn't interfere with, you know, which growth strategy you're working on, but it seems to be interfering with it working. You know, it's screwing up execution. And there's a whole range of issues. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to address each one of them one by one, you know, and let's see if, you know, off the cuff I can come up with answers for you. It's a little bit of a almost feels like improv. It feels like being Wayne Brady on that whose line is it anyway kind of show. And then I want to look at the pattern of what kinds of questions have been coming in because I think there's a thread. There is some common threads. Now, they're from all over the world, and they're all different industries, so we're going to have some fun with this and see if you recognize yourself. Classic, classic problems. Okay, first problem, question I got, it's in the context of the Mastering the Rockefeller Habits. Now, I've talked about that before. I have endorsed, you know, Vern Harnish's book on Mastering the Rockefeller Habits. It's been on the best-selling list for, gosh, 10 years now. And I think it's more timely now than it was 10 years ago. And he's updated his materials. The seminars are hot. And I just hosted a seminar of Mastering the Rockefeller Habits in New Jersey last week. And so one of the questions came from one of the participants in the seminar. And I've gotten the same one on email. Okay, so here we go. The question is, when you're trying to come up with your BHAG, in other words, your big, hairy, audacious goal, and you've heard that from Jim Collins and some other people use that phrase. All right. Is it a good idea to have your goal be that you want to, you know, be better than or beat an individual company? So, you know, if you're in the ice cream business, do you want to have your goal be beating Häagen-Dazs? All right. Now, that sounds good, except for here's my reaction to it. My punchline is you never know. Look at the financial markets right now. What if your goal had been to beat Bear Stearns? Here they are getting bought out this week for pennies on the dollar. The Fed is having to intervene in interest, and the federal government is having to figure out, you know, how much help they're going to give the various companies, Merrill, in buying them. Two other banks that are really large are probably going to have the same kind of situation later this week. So you've got to know the week that I'm doing this show if you're logging on, you know, later on in the time frame. What if your goal had been to beat Bear Stearns? What if your goal had been to beat Enron? You don't know some of the inside skinny, and there's a lot of things that aren't market-related about how companies operate. There's politics. There's whether or not, you know, there's a formula behind the products. There's a company in my town where I have my office. The ideal clothing store has been in Hamilton, New Jersey for so long. A guy bought it, I'm going to guess, about 10 years ago. Turned it into the largest store in New Jersey for prom dresses and formal wear. He invested in this place. He put in new dressing rooms. He's brought in all this kind of clothing. And I drove by it today, and there's a sign on it that says, closing store. It's a big sale. He died of a heart attack. The point is, you never know. So if the motivator that you're using internally is to beat a specific company, when you don't know the inside skinny about all the politics and all the inside, you know, information about what the board is doing and who's going to be retiring and, you know, what were the real philosophies behind it, what a demotivator for your employees if it goes away. Where does that leave you? I like goals that are written in a positive sense, where, you know, like Starbucks, where they wanted to be the number one recognized brand in the world. It's not even about coffee when you talk like that. And, it, you know, okay, they could have said, we want to beat Coca-Cola as a number one brand. Well, what if Coca-Cola is not the number one brand in X number of years? and then they've already done that, it's not big enough. So, punchline, I don't think it's related to the politics of another company. I think your goal needs to be about your company, about what you're trying to do. Big enough around your core competencies, bigger enough around the sweet spot of the marketplace that you serve. It's not about what the other guy's doing, and you never know. Okay, another question. This is a convoluted question, but an awful lot of people in the mid-market have it. I have two companies, and my real expertise is I love buying and selling businesses. I like buying them, turning them around, and selling them for a profit and going to do the next one. And they're fairly unrelated. All right, so I bought this one company, and it has a whole bunch of people that have been there for 20, 30 years. That's what this guy is saying. And, you know, the management has been, you know, what they've been honored by, what they've been incentivized on, is loyalty to the owner. What do I do now? Wow, that's a big question. It didn't even say what kind of industry it was. Now, so I emailed the guy back, and I asked what kind of company, because it does matter, you know, somewhat, because if it's a highly technical business, it may take a little bit longer for you to replace people or change the culture. If you don't know the kinds of work that they do, if, you know, they're not just incentivized on loyalty, they really are centered in their capabilities and their competence, it's going to have a different answer. All right, so it turns out it's a business that has some competency-based work, but mostly it's a pretty easy business. All right, my answer, and this is written in somewhat related to what I first started with, I think the Mastering the Rockefeller Habits is a cool answer. And the reason I say it, let me explain a little bit about what that's about. If you've not read the book, and really you should, go to gazelles.com or go to thegrowthstrategist.com and order some books. What I like about it is it's a simple methodology, and one of the core things is a meeting rhythm, where you really make a distinction between, you know, what's the difference between what you're talking about on a day-to-day basis in huddles. You stand up and you talk to each other about, you know, where are you on the metrics that we agreed we were going to do, you know, what happened yesterday, is there anywhere that you're stuck, and what are you going to do today? Real simple kind of agenda. Wow, does the culture change if you do daily huddles? And if your individual teams have weekly meetings about the problems, you know, they actually look at issues, you know, the management of your individual departments do problem solving on a weekly basis. That's very different than the day-to-day. You don't, you know, waste some time. It's only an 8-minute huddle on a daily basis. You know, and you actually have focused problem solving on a weekly basis. Your monthly meetings, you know, are, you can have them cross-functional and all that kind of stuff. But that's about your plan. You're declaring your top five, your top 1 of 5. You're setting priorities, you know, and the world shifts so that, you know, on a monthly basis you recognize maybe that the marketplace shifted or that you landed a big account or that your technology worked faster than you thought. I mean, stuff happens. So you make adjustments on a monthly basis, and your major strategies of where the business is going and whether or not you're going to acquire or you're going to do geographic expansion, you know, my kind of stuff, is on a quarterly basis. That one change, and particularly those daily huddles, what a difference it could make to a company that he's, you know, he just bought, and he's got 25 people. Most of them have been there a long, long time. Instead of jumping to the conclusion that they can't change, instead of, you know, assuming that he's got to make major changes in their compensation, which he probably does, and he may have to clean house, when people have to talk on a day-to-day basis about what are they doing and hear it, I find that their behavior changes. I find that they have to get past the feeling that they're left alone. They've been there all that time, and they could have felt that their owner, you know, abandoned them. There's a lot of almost childlike reactions to having been sold. Having the discipline to show that life is different. We are going to talk to each other. We're going to know what the other department's doing. We're going to celebrate little wins on a day-to-day basis. We're not going to let big, you know, little problems become big problems because we talk together on a day-to-day basis. Has a stunning impact. That, and it's so free. It's not like you have to spend a lot of money on technology. 8 minutes a day, wow, is powerful. And it even saves you money on some of the assessment tools. Because you can watch how people respond to the daily huddles. That one change. Kind of like that movie City Slickers where you have Jack Palance, you know, his curly sitting up on that horse going, it's one thing. If you change one thing about a company that you bought that has 20, 25 people and they're set in their ways, and they want to know who you are, and you want to know who they are, and you're modifying the culture, and you have big decisions about whether or not you're going to do wholesale, you know, cleaning of the employees or just leave it as it is or something in between, start with the free change of daily huddles, the meeting rhythms that are part of the Mastering the Rockefeller Habits. That's the first thing I've changed in that business. And let the discovery happen. There may be some people who are have wanted to be leaders that felt inhibited, and they can step forward because they're going to start hearing the patterns and they watch you listen. There's some people who are followers that have been coasting, and it'll be real evident when the eyes roll and people make the comments that they don't even realize they're telling you about, well, you know, that's how it is, and that's not going to change. You'll hear so much if you change that one thing. Okay, third question. All right, I've got a business that's a cash cow. It's 6-7 people, and we're working as hard as we can, but, oh, my God, the margins are just fabulous. Do I need to change anything or just ride the wave? Isn't that an interesting question? All right, so now how would you even approach the question? All right, so my question back was, what's the purpose of the business? If in the portfolio for this owner, the business is serving as a cash cow, and that's all it is for him, he doesn't have to get overly excited about, you know, what it, you know, how many people it has. But if the purpose is for him to play and to have a part in doing the work, if that's what he enjoys, they may have another answer. If it's only a cash cow temporarily and he has to find another way to replace it, there's another answer. So I would go back to, what's the purpose of the business? Now, it turns out he's spending a lot of time having to do the work. He's one of the 7 people. And his real love is buying and selling companies. This is the same guy. All right, so it's a cash cow, but that's, you know, he's being distracted. So how big does the business need to be to stay as a cash cow for him, to fund some of his other purchases, and not take so much of his time that it slows him down? That's a set point for the business. And most businesses don't end up being a cash cow forever. There's a life cycle. I would look at, you know, what size does the business need to be to meet the multiple purposes of money and still having time to do the next deal. Do you hear a thread yet? First question was about, how do you define the BHAG? And it's about the purpose of the business. It's about, you know, how do you establish your goal? How do you stay centered? What makes people tick and excited about the company? Is it beating somebody else out? You know, you can say it in competitive terms. That's what keeps them centered, is what's the BHAG? Second question was about the people. Okay, what keeps them centered is the communication, so that they know life is changing. Why are we here? What's the reason, de rigueur? Third one was about, you know, a cash cow. The contexts are very, very different. And the answer came back all 3 times. What's the purpose of the business? And how do you get it conveyed to people on a day-to-day basis? What are some inexpensive ways that make it sink in? Hear the pattern? This is The Growth Strategist with Aldana Ambler. We'll be right back.
Talk about his money. Call us toll free, 866-472-5790, and talk to the experts. We talk money all the time. Voice America Business.
If you're a struggling business trying to get to the next plateau and would like to learn more about what Aldana can do for you, log on to thegrowthstrategist.com. Listen to some of our many satisfied clients.
We called in the Growth Strategist to do a strategic analysis of our company, design an organizational structure, and improve our management team. The important point is that Aldana Ambler gets it. Her extensive experience coaching fast growth companies has really paid off for us.
Aldana played a key role in driving the rapid growth of our company. We now have a strategic growth plan in place, obtained growth financing, have a stronger management team, and expanded our services, and are already seeing profits. Companies dealing with business growth issues couldn't ask for a better or wiser business advisor than Aldana Ambler.
What are you waiting for? Call 1-888-ALDONA today and see where your business can go tomorrow. Once again, that number is 1-888-ALDONNA. TheGrowthStrategist.com. Achieving accelerated growth with sustained profitability.
When you have a stroke, you may not even notice it right away. But then, time passes, and the symptoms get worse. 1 minute you feel fine, and the next, your speech could be slurred or not make sense. One side of your body might become numb. You might see double. You drop the TV remote because you can't hold up your arm. That's because, after a stroke, every minute you don't get help is another minute that your brain is being starved of oxygen. The warning signs of a stroke include sudden numbness or weakness of the face, arm, or leg, sudden trouble seeing, speaking, or understanding. If you experience any of these warning signs, call 911 immediately, because time lost is brain lost. Visit strokeassociation.org or call 1-888-4-STROKE today. A public service announcement from the American Stroke Association and the Ad Council.
Are you feeling slammed and suckered in today's stock market? If so, then you need to tune in to Profitable Investing with Jordan Kimmel. Every Thursday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time, Jordan Kimmel will train you in what you can do to beat up the big boys on Wall Street, as well as share his secrets to success so that you can buy and sell like a profit-pumping pro. Grab the bull market by the horns and listen to Profitable Investing with Jordan Kimmel. Every Thursday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time, right here on the Bottom Line in Business Talk, Voice America Business.
The Bottom Line in Business, Voice America Business.
You're logged on to The Growth Strategist with Aldana Ambler. Call in right now with your questions and comments toll free at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Now let's jump into another segment of The Growth Strategist. Here's Aldana Ambler.
Welcome back to the show. This is The Growth Strategist, and I'm Aldana Ambler. And today I'm fielding questions that have come into me by email. What I asked people to give me were, what are the situations that you're facing that interfere with your growth strategies actually playing out? You know, they know which one they want to do. Sometimes you made a decision you're going to do a strategic alliance or a joint venture or an acquisition, whatever it was. And that wasn't the issue. You know, it's the execution on a day-to-day basis. You know, gosh, you know, it's not easy. You run out of money. You have the wrong people. You have communication issues. The execution is the real problem. That's interesting. Well, one of the things I wonder about is, when you were looking at your strategy, was there enough consideration of how hard the execution would be? Because there's an integration question about strategy, execution, people, and cash. And so when you set your strategy, it's not just what the marketplace is telling you it needs and wants and wishes it had from you. It's, can you do it? And you know, can you afford it? Can you find the people that are going to be able to do it for you? These are integrated. And one of the things I noticed that when we do the Mastering the Rockefeller Habit seminars, a lot of times people struggle with, you know, they'll look at it almost as silos, and they'll say, okay, here's what my strategy is going to be. I'm real psyched about, you know, I'm going to be really aggressive, and we're going to be the high-end player, and it's going to be value-added, and all kinds of aggressive talk. And then when you get into the execution, there isn't aggressive talk. There isn't aggressive investment. There isn't aggressive, you know, investment in technology. There isn't aggressive, you know, it's more of a, how do we band-aid it? How do we solve? How do we fix? And it's like a different person's talking. I wish somebody could have a videotape sometimes of the difference in how they sound when they're doing the strategy question versus the execution question. Oh, and when we hit the cash piece, when we hit the money piece, it's very visible. You can see people talking from a reactive, uninformed, I hope we can kind of viewpoint. So there's a pattern in the questions. As to, it reveals where does somebody excel and where does some, you know, what's the weak point? What's the Achilles heel of a business? All right, so let's try one. How about if you're in the fashion industry? That's a very competitive, very visible, almost emotional industry. Okay. So where would you think the classic problems are? Is it in the, is it like everybody else and not knowing what the, you know, having real clarity about the strategy and having problems with the people issues and the cash? All right, and so what if you knew what your model was? You've got a new approach to the pulling together the fashions. You have a new approach to maybe the shows. And you're using technology. You've got the day-to-day execution down. And where you're having trouble, surprise, surprise, is in the sales side. What if that, because that's not normal. That wouldn't necessarily be the typical predictive thing. And let's say, you know, hypothetically, what's going on with you is, you had three or four salespeople walk. you don't have a sales force. Now, okay, think like a consultant. How did that happen? How are you on a roll? You've got a concept. You know how to execute it. You've invested in technology. You're very creative with marketing. You've got all the pieces. Where are the sales folks? How can that possibly happen? Right now, the first diagnostic step would be maybe they're not compensated well. You know, that's just the first thing that occurs to me. Because if the formulas aren't right, if the incentives aren't right for salespeople, they walk. They can get themselves all in a fluff over, you know, money, obviously. Okay, so let's say you look at that and you discover, you know, the core compensation, the base pay for the salespeople was competitive, and the commissions matched what everybody else is giving. Bonuses looked right, and there's even creativity about spa weekends and you know, flat-screen TVs and all kinds. That's not the compensation. So why would a bunch of salespeople leave? Okay, keep going further. And so my next question is, what's going on at the top? What's going on about the purpose of the business? You hear the pattern again? Is there design for this to grow? What are the owners doing? Because if a whole group of salespeople leave, if it's not about compensation, to me, I wonder if it's about their authority, if it's about, you know, when they were trying to sell something, do they have any kind of leeway? Or are they always arguing with the owners? Or is there like a moving target in what they're selling? Day-to-day, it's very frustrating on a day-to-day basis for salespeople. If they think they're selling one package and then it's not there and they're promising something and then it can't be delivered, integrity matters. People, they want their credibility to be kept intact. It's not just enough to have money. So the second thing I would look at if a sales force exits is the ownership credible? Are they consistent? Are they change? Are they meddling? Are they micromanaging? Are they playing? Aha! So if you're in the fashion industry, think about it. There's all this temptation to tweak the design, play with the, you know, the approach, and make a statement. And if the owners are doing that, how crazy can it make the salespeople? So if you're tempted to start going out to some expensive assessment tool to really find the best sales manager and to figure, you know, one of the methods I think, I don't think it's expensive, it saves a lot of money, is the top grading method, because you interview people about their history. You go through, you know, what were they doing in high school and how did they make decisions and how did they, when they took a job, why did they take it? And you look at transitions. And so if they left a job, what prompted it? You know, what was it about? Okay, that's all great. But if you haven't really interviewed the owners about if they're a moving target, if they're still tweaking the business, if they're interfering enough, if they're inconsistent enough, if the purpose of the business is for them to play and to experiment and to fiddle with it, you could spend a lot of money even on something like the top grading method to find the right sales manager and the wonderful salespeople, and it still won't work if you haven't really looked at what the owners are doing and the purpose of the business and why do they have inconsistency. Do you hear a pattern here? In that example, it's totally different than the other three, and the answer still comes back to revisit the purpose of the business. Try another one. I wasn't looking for this being the answer, but it's almost like a game of Jeopardy. You know, if the answer is, what's the purpose of the business? What was the problem? Excuse my language, but damn near anything. If the purpose of the business is not clear, if it hasn't been articulated, if it's not consistently followed through, if the whole company doesn't know it and can rally around it, a lot of other decisions are almost moot points. And, of course, you've got problems if the purpose has shifted. Let's try another one. One of the gentlemen that was in the session this last week, and I'm not saying anything proprietary. These are things that they've all, you know, talked about publicly. You know, he's in a tough business. He's an advertising agency that's related to employment. What a cool niche. Now, it's a little tricky because Monster.com and the various other, you know, entities, that you know, Career Builder, et cetera, you know, have gone on the Internet. The Internet piece has changed, you know, employment advertising. It clearly has. So it's kind of like if you were a travel agency. The technology has changed things so much. Would you stay as a travel agent? Same thing if you were in advertising, you know, employment-related advertising. So this guy's really bright, and he's looking at different kinds of business models and different kinds of businesses. So what are some of the key questions you would ask? Just imagine yourself, if you're in employment advertising, what are the key questions? You haven't even met the guy, and you know the questions. Think about it. Where's your expertise? Is it in employment? Is it in advertising? Or is it in something else? Is your expertise, is your sweet spot, is your core competence in problem solving? Is it in relationship management? Is it in financing ideas? Is it in technology, in creating different solutions? Is it in product development? And sometimes if you're in an industry that has a real threat, frankly, it's clear enough that it forces you to ask the tough questions that other people should ask but don't. I'm going to say that again. Sometimes it's actually a favor to be in a tough enough industry that you must ask the core competence question while other people are coasting and thinking they don't have to. So this, you know, he's in employment advertising. He's going to have to ask, what is the true core competence? And someone else who is in, let's pick something, sometimes the retailers don't look until there's a recession, until there's the R word saying, people might not buy. And then they hunker down and they go into the back room and they start figuring out, okay, what products should we really be focusing on? What customers are really the best ones? They should have been doing that anyway. Why does it take a recession to slam us in the head and ask us, you know, what is the core competence that we need to leverage? And during a recession, you better know the answer. Well, this guy's discovering it. Now, I'm not going to say the punchline of what he's doing because he's going, you know, he's creating a new business and it's very exciting. But it was wonderful to watch him be open to the question and the exploration of what's the core competence, what's the sweet spot, what are some of the cool things that the company can do to really leverage, you know, 20 years of experience. And it may not sound like employment advertising in a year. So what? Isn't that neat that he's open to the journey? Are you open to the journey? That's the good news, and it sounds corny. It sounds Pollyanna, I know. The good news of a recession is it makes you ask the questions you needed to ask anyway. Let's try another one. There was a manufacturing company, and actually they worked in plastic. They had some virgin and they had some regrind. And they did blow-molded bottles, and they did the caps, and sometimes you'd be surprised how much engineering goes in the different shapes of bottles and containers and in the valves. And so they got into assembly of, you know, like these multiple-part valves, and at one point they even experimented with making cassette tapes because they felt that one of their core competencies was the assembly part, not just the engineering part. But you can picture the business. It's got, you know, if you walk into the main room, you know, the core room of the building, you know, there's these blow molding, you know, you can hear that in the background. Picture it. Okay, and you can smell the plastic. And, you know, you can picture the kind of customers that they have. Maybe it would be the ones that sell the toner for the photocopiers, or it could be people who sell fluid for another industry like oil, but you can picture the engineering department, 5-6 people that are consultative kind of engineers, and they listen to folks talk about their problems, and they design a container for it. What's their core problem? You don't know yet. Okay, here's what they asked. Family business, and the husband and wife really liked, you know, running the company. The husband ran, you know, was basically the top engineer. He was innovative, really, really bright. And they wanted to have a family atmosphere. And so they had annual parties, annual picnics, all that kind of stuff. And they even had T-shirts where people are, I'm going to make up the name of the company, Sweaterites. And, you know, so everybody knew that they were part of this family. But the kids didn't want to run the business. So they had this family idea, but the kids don't want to run it. And they don't even want to own it. So at some point, they were going to sell. So all the language was about that the managers were going to be owners. After the break, I'm going to come back and tell you what the question was. This is The Growth Strategist with Aldona Ambler. We'll be right back.
Money, up-to-date business and financial news. Money. Call now and get the financial information you need. 866-472-5790. 866-472-5790. Voice America Business.
If you're a struggling business trying to get to the next plateau and would like to learn more about what Aldana can do for you, log on to thegrowthstrategist.com. Listen to some of our many satisfied clients.
We called in the growth strategist to do a strategic analysis of our company, design an organizational structure, and improve our management team. The important point is that Aldana Ambler gets it. Her extensive experience coaching fast growth companies has really paid off for us.
Aldana played a key role in driving the rapid growth of our company. We now have a strategic growth plan in place, obtained growth financing, have a stronger management team, and expanded our services, and are already seeing profits. Companies dealing with business growth issues couldn't ask for a better or wiser business advisor than Aldana Ambler.
What are you waiting for? Call 1-888-ALDANA today and see where your business can go tomorrow. Once again, that number is 1-888-ALDONNA. TheGrowthStrategist.com. Achieving accelerated growth with sustained profitability.
Have you ever had a bad day and wish someone could come along and change it at the flip of a switch? Do you dream of living the life of wealth, great relationships, and the perfect job, but don't know where to start? Then tune into The Winner's Attitude with corporate trainers, motivators, authors, and hosts Jeff and Val G. No difficult strategies or complicated keys. Jeff and Val present a powerful and effective technology to switch your operating system to create the most amazing life. It has been said that winners have simply formed the habit of doing amazing things. Winners know how to activate that switch, and so can you. The Winner's Attitude with Jeff and Val G. Broadcast each Friday at 8 a.m. Pacific, 11 a.m. Eastern on the Voice America Business Channel. The Winner's Attitude. Switch me on.
Hey, Dad.
What?
I can't get the ketchup bottle open.
Here, let me try. Here you go.
Thanks.
You don't have to be a hero to be a hero. When you adopt a child from foster care, just being there makes all the difference. To learn more, call 1-888-200-4005. A public service announcement brought to you by Adopt U.S. Kids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
The Internet's only all business and financial radio network, Voice America Business.
You're logged on to The Growth Strategist with Aldana Ambler. Call in right now with your questions and comments toll-free at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Now let's jump into another segment of The Growth Strategist. Here's Aldana Ambler.
Welcome back to the show. This is The Growth Strategist, Aldana Ambler, and I painted a picture before the break of a company in plastic blow molding and injection molding. Okay, so what was the problem? Well, the big problem they had is when it came time for the retirement, what do? They hadn't structured the sale, and they didn't think like they had really promised the managers anything. But if the purpose of the business was to have a family culture, they didn't have a meeting about what's the purpose of the business. They really didn't. They thought they did, but they hadn't. It wasn't about the blow molding, and it wasn't about solving problems, and it wasn't about the marketplace. That's just what they did on a day-to-day basis. The true purpose of the business, apparently, was for the family, for that guy, the top, you know, the man in the family, to have a place to do his engineering and a place for him to have fun and a place for his, you know, for his family to have money. And when it came time to sell, what they ended up doing is they didn't offer it to the managers. They assumed that they weren't going to have enough money. They assumed that they weren't going to be able to get in the right kind of price, and what the heck, their kids aren't going to buy it anyway. So they wanted to go for the biggest money they could get, and it didn't matter who they sold it to. It was so ugly that the managers were so hurt, so insulted, they didn't let the owners, the former owners, in the building again. They were just, they were crestfallen. Now, I wonder if the money could have been there. Those managers could have come up with it. They had lived there and worked there for so long and were under the impression that the family stuff meant something, that even though they weren't genetically related, it was family. That was the language. That was the culture. That was the promise. That was the big, hairy, audacious goal, is that the company would somehow stay family no matter what. And it was the biggest broken promise I've seen in a long time. So what was the question to me? What could we have, should we have done differently? To me, the step of, even if you didn't promise it, if you can at least be honest with yourself about that the purpose of the business was family, to go through the step of letting the managers find, could they come up with the money? How long would it take? You know, what would the financing be? Give them a chance. But to skip that step and to go secret, to go quiet, and to sell it to strangers, change the purpose of the business, and it announced that everything before was a lie. So sometimes if you haven't had a meeting about what the true business of, you know, purpose of the business is, you can have a traumatic event like that. Now, the owners got some money from the new, you know, people who bought, but they didn't get as much as they would have because there was still some linkage to performance after the sale. And can you imagine how the performance went down when everybody felt like they'd been lied to all those years? Okay, next one. Business is, you know, related to software. It's the people that come in, you know, because sometimes when you buy the SAP or the PeopleSoft or whatever kind of software, the big stuff, you know, where it's a major decision, you're changing the course of the business. A lot of companies, you know, they only get maybe 10-20% of the useful life out of it if they don't get help. And every business has some of its own tailored applications and its own unique needs. And so there's businesses that are built on servicing these major softwares. Yeah, some of the, you know, that service comes directly from the companies. You can certainly get help from SAP directly. You can certainly get help from PeopleSoft directly. But, you know, there's also other businesses out there that they have these focused engineers and you know, consultants, management consultants that are really good at software that come in and help you, you know, get squeeze every inch of your invest, you know, the money out of your investment. Okay, what's the purpose of the business? I'm going to just ask that question. Now, the question that I got asked was, how big should we grow? How do we take over the country? How do we make a whole lot of money and be able to sell in 10 years? All right. So the purpose of it, apparently, is to grow it really fast and sell. That's the purpose. Is that what's going to motivate the employees who are working on the individual jobs? Is that what's going to keep people excited about the target markets that they're in? Is that what's going to keep them thinking that this is a really cool company? If the primary purpose is to build it really big and sell and get out. Now, that makes it sound like those things are competing because, you know, a lot of times that you know, to build the value and sell is the primary goal that the owner has. A lot of publicly held companies have that burden. You know, the shareholders, what they're looking for is they want return. And day-to-day, the people living it have something else in mind as the primary purpose. Okay, so how do you resolve that? All right, if you have a discussion about what the purpose of the business is, apparently one of the purposes is to grow. But through what? Through what? Is it expertise in a certain kind of software? Now, my question is just the same thing as going back to the first question about, you know, should your BHAG be to beat Haagen-Dazs? Well, should your BHAG be, should your identity be that you're the best at a certain software? You don't know what's going to happen with the software. You don't know what the company is going to do. You could be linked to a major player and have your identity taken, you know, just so totally affected by what a large corporation is going to do. I always get worried about that, attaching your, you know, your wagon to one horse. All right, roundabout way of saying, and sorry if I'm not being as direct as I would normally be. I think the discussion has to be about the life of the business after this owner's sale. What is the competitive advantage? What's going to make this company go even larger than after that guy is gone? What is it going to be known for? And, you know, it may not be the specific software. If right now the best horse to be attached to is, you know, something that's coming out of, you know, IBM or something that's coming out of Microsoft or something that's coming out of Oracle, you know, whatever it is, if that's the right horse right now, is that your identity? What are you going to be known for? If your expertise is around problem solving, maybe it's an industry. If your expertise is around a process, maybe it's around financial. If your expertise is around, you know, maybe people being able to get their bills paid, you know, it's technical problem solving. For whom? And how big should the company be for it to have energy sustained well past whoever owns it? What's it going to, you know, how does it function? What's different about it? What differentiates the business? So, you know, I started to focus on, you know, let's assume that the owner's going to get out of here in 5 years. let's make the plan for 10 years so that the employees are still here and it's got some momentum. And with or without this existing owner, who cares? It's got some resilience and it did something. So we picked target industries. We picked, you know, a key sweet spot that they're going to be known for. We changed the marketing program so that it wasn't so five-year oriented. It wasn't just a compulsion with salespeople closing deals and that's it. It changes it from being cold to being something where people care about what they're doing. You feel it? Okay, next question. We're topped out at $20 million. We don't know why. It seems like we've done everything we can. What are we missing? We've looked at this. We've hired the right people. We're making programs. I mean, we've done everything we can think of. Now what? Now, there's a lot of industries where there really are some classic plateaus. So one of the things I would say back is, okay, which industry are you in? Is a $20 million plateau typical? That's the one thing I'd ask. Because in some industries, that's not a plateau. That, you know, there's something that's usually a dynamic point for some companies. But in this particular industry, yep, it's in electrical wholesale, and $20 million is a real typical kind of a plateau. Well, why? Why would that be? Well, when you run the numbers and you do the math, you start looking at it and say, well, they probably have one major hub. They may have 10 to 12 different stores. And they've reached the point where they've got to make a big decision about investment. Ooh, and the next wave is going to be very expensive. It's going to be things like technology. It would be things like, you know, do you have a comprehensive purchasing system that glues everybody together? And if you don't, you know, how are you going to afford that? Wow. And at that kind of point, let's take a look at what your management team has. It might have a controller, but it doesn't have a CFO. Ooh. And you have some salespeople, but you might not have a really, truly strong sales manager. You may have a guy that loves to still go after big accounts and maybe actually interfering and competing with some of the top salespeople. And what else might be going on at topped out at 20? You might have a more of a local focus, but not really regional. Kind of hesitant to spend too much money on the trucks and so you're at kind of, there's an inertia. There's an internal inertia around, should you make the decision for like a second hub, you know, a second big, big warehouse? Do you have them? Where are you going to find the money? Where are you going to find the money to, you know, hire the CFO? Where are you going to find the money for probably the HR department's pretty limp. You know, it's probably a personnel compliance kind of department that's working the payroll and making sure everybody's got benefits. Can you hear the question? What do you want? Why would you grow? What's the purpose of the business? This is The Growth Strategist with Aldona Ambler. We'll be right back with how do you figure out why should you bother to grow?
Stocks, bonds, 401ks, investments, refinancing. We can help you. Call now toll free, 866-472-5790, 866-472-5790. Voice America Business.
If you're a struggling business trying to get to the next plateau and would like to learn more about what Aldona can do for you, log on to thegrowthstrategist.com. Listen to some of our many satisfied clients.
We called in the Growth Strategist to do a strategic analysis of our company, design an organizational structure, and improve our management team. The important point is that Aldona Ambler gets it. Her extensive experience coaching fast growth companies has really paid off for us.
Aldona played a key role in driving the rapid growth of our company. We now have a strategic growth plan in place, obtained growth financing, have a stronger management team, and expanded our services, and are already seeing profits. Companies dealing with business growth issues couldn't ask for a better or wiser business advisor than Aldona Ambler.
What are you waiting for? Call 1-888-ALDONA today and see where your business can go tomorrow. Once again, that number is 1-888-ALDONNA. TheGrowthStrategist.com. Achieving accelerated growth with sustained profitability.
is your job heavenly or closer to hell on earth? Maybe it's time you stop waiting on employers to make you satisfied and learn how to recognize your own career contentment. Jeff Garten and his expert guests show you how every Thursday at 12 noon Pacific when you tune into Career Contentment Radio on the Voice America Business Radio Network. Contentment is yours to control and easier to achieve than happiness or satisfaction.
Small business owners, do you want answers to your most pressing financial concerns? Do you want to stop stressing about money and finally understand how to create wealth? Let Elizabeth Potts Weinstein and the Wealth Spa Radio Show answer your most pressing financial and legal questions about your small business and help you achieve business success and the lifestyle of your dreams easier and faster than you could imagine. The Wealth Spa Radio Show broadcasts live every Wednesday at 11 a.m. Pacific on the Voice America Business Radio Network.
The bottom line in business. Voice America Business.
You're logged on to The Growth Strategist with Aldana Ambler. Call in right now with your questions and comments toll-free at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Now let's jump into another segment of The Growth Strategist. Here's Aldana Ambler.
Welcome back to the show. This is Aldana Ambler on The Growth Strategist. I want to give you some contact information because the exchange of information between us is really fun. If you want to reach me online, if you know my name, it's real easy. It's Aldana, A-L-D-O-N-N-A, at Ambler, A-M-B-L-E-R, .com. And the toll-free number in the United States is 1-888-ALDANA. I have multiple businesses, and, you know, over the years, I grew a consultancy to, like, 123 full-time consultants and went through an ESOP and spun off some other companies. And, you know, one of them's a venture capital business, and I have a one-third share of a manufacturing plant on the other side of the world, and the speaking business. And, you know, the portfolio's got, like, six companies in it at any given time. So I have all these different telephone numbers. That's a long way of saying if you're dealing directly with me, it's 1-888-ALDANA. I left off at the break with the question of we've hit $20 million plateau. Now what? Okay, now we know that in this case it was a typical kind of a mark for the industry. That matters because if you're at a plateau and it's not consistent with your industry and that's not a normal place, you probably have some execution issues in how you formulate your profit. There's something missing in an execution kind of a point. In this case, it was a real typical kind of a thing and classic, and it was at a decision point, you know, that what you've done to get you to the dance this far got you to 20, but it's not going to take you further. So how do you figure out? Why would you want to grow? It goes back to the owners. It goes back to the decision makers. In this case, the owner was somebody that needed a certain amount of money to fund his, you know, philanthropy and his hobbies and things that he wanted to do. And, you know, he had some kids that he wanted to support, but mostly he had a dollar amount that he needed, and that was it. He didn't have passion for the business anymore, but the people who ran it did. So how would you solve that? Okay, you'd get the dollar amount that the owner needs for him to be happy, negotiate with him about how much money he's willing to invest, and then you look to the top group and you say, okay, now we've got a big jump, a big change we'd need to make here. Why would we want to do it? Well, if you pick a goal like what if we doubled and we tripled the profit so that there'd be a benefit from all the hard work? What if we quadrupled and made the profit eight times? You know, do something that's exponential and walk through it and say, if we got that, how would life be different? What would it buy us? Because the reason I do that is if somebody says, let's incrementally change, let's like have 5% growth this next year, first of all, it just feels like more hard work. And why would the people do it? They're already at plateau. They're already at a point where they've done as many ideas as they can think of. They need transformational change. And if it's not enough of a change, they can't feel it. It's just tiring, and there's no reason to do it. But if you grow, if you set the next goal point to be big enough that, yep, of course, you've got the CFO. You've got another hub. You've got multiple branches. You probably are at the point where you're acquiring some of these branches instead of having to try to organically grow them every time. You've got to the point where you can afford a different kind of marketing where the manufacturers might be funding a major portion of what you're doing. You know, you are going to be the ones that are funding the cruises for your best customers. You would be at the point where your management team has a different kind of attitude. They're more informed. They make decisions. It's not only one guy at the top dictating what's going to happen. Now, how did that happen? But if you draw the vision, you draw the picture of what would a company that's 100 million, what would they be like? What are their systems like? Why is it easier? Why is the barcoding in the warehouse such a big deal? Why, you know, what would the pick and the, you know, the pick list and the inventory turns, you'd actually know them. Wow. What a different place that would be. And if you dwell on it, if you actually draw the picture, image, you know, the transformation, say, you know, what a cool place this would be, that we'd be learning, we're not going to stay stuck. We're going to have different technology. Wow. We know we're a hot company. We actually know the price points. We don't have 63 price points. We actually know. We guarantee availability of 100 top items. I mean, that kind of language, there's a competence that people get excited about. Now, some folks don't want to do that. When it's a company like this, they'll say, well, gosh, these aren't college-bound people. These aren't folks that are so analytical. Why would they get excited about doing things new ways? Are you kidding me? I have been amazed and really impressed by people in wholesale. Think about it. They're in the middle. They're squeezed by the manufacturers and squeezed by the reps, and they have to really know what they're doing to stay in business at all. And some of the hardest working, most competent, and focused people, they know the product and they have to know the customers and make it all come together and work the logistics, are in distribution. Don't kid yourself about, you know, how simple the business is. It's just the opposite. That's a tough business. You got to be very astute and balanced and dedicated and follow through. They're going to be motivated by an image of competence, of doing the right thing. So you spend some time. The point is you spend some time on what's the image of what we're trying to create. It's vision-driven change. It's very transformational. It's not a developmental kind of change where it's incremental and you just work harder and harder and harder. That's not motivating. There's no fun. On a day-to-day basis to make it happen, you say, okay, this is the image of what we're trying to create. Is the suggestion that you just gave us, is the idea that you just gave us consistent with that image? Great, let's do it. If it's not consistent with the image of that new company we're trying to create, let's not do it. And it's a judgment-driven day-to-day change. Okay, do you hear the theme? What was the purpose of the business? The purpose of the business was excellence. The purpose of the business was to be state-of-the-art. The purpose of the business was to be the best. It's not just about electrical wholesale. It's not just about the couple million bucks for the owner. It's about that it's worth going to work. It's not about the light bulbs. That it's worth going to work. And the culture ends up being one of the major purposes. Now, how did that happen? It happened when somebody said, you know what? 20 isn't enough. We don't like staying stuck. It's not the number. We don't like being at the same point every day. We're going to get bored. It doesn't feel right. We're better than that. There's the phrase, the recognition that the people in that business were better than that and that their company purpose could be, yeah, we're worth more. It's almost like the L'Oreal ad, that you're worth it. Is the top of your business looking at the purpose? Are you actually reconsidering? Maybe the purpose looked like it was to build it to sale. Maybe the purpose looked like it was fun for the owner to play in that area. Maybe the purpose was that it made a statement. And maybe it's time to revisit the purpose of your business. Because if it's starting to drift, if you're hitting plateaus, if you're worried about recession, if you're having a hard time making decisions related to money, if the integration of strategy, execution, people, and cash doesn't seem to kind of come together, and you're starting to ask out-of-context questions like, ugh, we're so tired, we've tried everything I can think of, now what? If you have that now what feeling, I would suggest, especially in a recession, especially when people are nervous, it means your prospects are indecisive. Even if you don't think the recession's hurting you, it's affecting your customers and your prospects. They're going to be indecisive. And in a recession, whenever that happens, when you've had drift, when you're starting to lose that essence, that simple phrase, the one thing, what's the purpose of the business? Why are we doing what we're doing? It has to be crystal clear like a mantra, because there's going to be preoccupation, distraction, worry, fretting, assumptions, skip steps. All that stuff is going to get exaggerated in the next several months. Go back to what the primary purpose of the business is and make sure it's clear. My wish for you, as it is every week, is for accelerated growth with sustained profitability. How could your business double its volume and triple its profit? Through clarity of purpose. This is the Growth Strategist, Aldana Ambler, signing out.